Last season, millions tuned into the Betrayal podcast to hear a shocking story of deception. I'm Andrea Gunning, and now we're sharing an all-new story of betrayal. Justin Rutherford. Doctor, father, family man. It was the perfect cover to hide behind.
Detective Weaver said, "I'm sure you know why we're here." I was like, "What in the world is going on?"
Listen to Betrayal on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, listener. I'm Carol Fisher, the host of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister. I'm so excited for you to hear the brand new season where we're uncovering a 35-year-old mystery. But for those of you who didn't hear season one or just want to listen to it again, you can now get access to all episodes of that first season of The Girlfriends 100% ad-free through the iHeart True Crime Plus subscription, which is available exclusively on Apple Podcasts. You'll also get access to every single episode of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, ad-free and 1 week early, only available to iHeart True Crime Plus subscribers. So what are you waiting for? Head to Apple Podcasts, search for iHeart True Crime Plus, and subscribe today.
A new season of Bridgerton is here, and with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix, then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
The following interview was recorded in person at the 2024 Innocence Network Conference in New Orleans. On March 6, 2001, in McHenry, Illinois, two masked men, one armed with a .22, attempted to rob a Mexican takeout joint. But the owner grabbed a butcher knife, and his employee followed as they chased the men out. They caught one of the assailants and removed his mask. The other assailant turned around, ripped off his mask, and opened fire, fatally shooting the owner. And the surviving employee ran back inside to call the police. The police canvassed the area and discovered four young people in a house up the street, including a young woman named Jennifer McMullen. Eventually, she and two of her friends confessed to a role in the robbery homicide. But this is wrongful conviction. Wrongful conviction has always given voice to innocent people in prison, and now we're expanding that voice to you. Call us at 833-207-4666 and tell us how these stories make you feel and what you've done to help the cause, even if it's something as simple as telling a friend or sharing on social media. And you might just hear yourself in a future episode. Call us, 833-207-4666.
Welcome back to Wrongful Conviction. Today's story is like something out of a Quentin Tarantino movie. And the investigation, if you can call it that, is like something out of the Three Stooges or Keystone Cops or something much more sinister. First of all, we have, for the first time, we have the co-director of the Illinois Innocence Project, Stephanie Camel. She's been hiding out from us while some of her colleagues have been on the show multiple times, but it's overdue, but I'm really honored to have you here.
Thank you so much for having us and for profiling Jennifer's case. We really appreciate it.
I don't want to embarrass you, but you're kind of a legend in this space. So, you know, it's really great to have you here. And I'm very lucky and honored to have the person here who lived through this ordeal. Jennifer McMullen, thanks for being here. Welcome to Wrongful Conviction.
Thank you so much.
And I always say I'm so happy you're here, but I'm sorry you're here because you should have never been on this show in the first place. This case came with instructions. You were only 19 when this happened, and talk about what your life was like because you were a law-abiding, sort of normal person. You were born where?
Oh, Libertyville, Illinois.
Libertyville, Illinois. Yes. Sounds very all-American.
It is.
Is it like one traffic light, like that kind of place?
Or? I mean, it's a busy small town. But yeah, it's an amazing place. I was born there and grew up around Lake Beach with my stepfather and mother.
Only child?
Three older siblings. Uh-huh. The eldest is my brother. And then the other two are sisters. There's 10 years difference between me and the next daughter. So they were all out and getting married and having families. And I was the oops. I came 10 years later. So growing up in my teens, I was the only one in the house. But yeah, it was a great childhood. Never in trouble. Was always in sports, softball, soccer, competitive cheer and dance. Sports was definitely a passion for me.
Got it. Okay. Yeah. So you had it sounds like a nice childhood.
Yes,
no?
Absolutely. I had an amazing childhood, amazing parents, siblings, family. It was great.
And quite an athletic resume you have there as well. As someone who didn't make the sports teams in high school, I'm a little jealous, but you know, I'm going to let that slide. That's why I played the guitar and smoked pot instead. But that's a different podcast. We're not going to talk about that now. But anyway, okay, so then let's go to this crime. Okay, this was on March 6th of 2001. Two masked men attempted to rob a small restaurant in McHenry, Illinois, right? A Burrito Express. The owner, wielding a butcher knife, and his employee chased the two men out of the restaurant. And in the ensuing chase, the owner was shot and killed. Jennifer, you stumbled onto this scene, right? So to speak. I mean, you were, talk about wrong place, wrong time.
Absolutely.
Tell us how you came upon this chaotic and terrifying scene, and then how you eventually got implicated.
Definitely. So that day, I remember I had got a call from one of my friends who needed to find somebody to borrow a laptop. So I called another friend who I knew had one. So I went and grabbed my three co-defendants. We headed out to Twin Lakes, Wisconsin, you know, just young, listening to music, enjoying a car ride, get to Twin Lakes. We end up finding out that my friend wasn't allowed to loan out her laptop. I think we stayed there about 15 minutes, you know, just chit-chatting. And then we were on our way, the four of us again, and headed out to McHenry, Illinois, where one of my co-defendants had a very close family friend who lived out there.
Our listeners may remember McHenry, Illinois, from the story of Mario Casciaro, whose lead detective was a former failed hardware store stock boy. Yeah, I know. It sounds crazy, but it's true. And it's the same prosecutorial team, Combs and Keneally, who prosecuted Mario three separate times while having more evidence supporting an alternative narrative. And we're going to have that incredible episode linked in the episode description because Jennifer's case bears such a strong resemblance.
As we're coming into McHenry, we heard like a lot of commotion, ambulance, squad cars. We ended up going to a smoke shop, dispensary type place. Only one co-defendant went in and the rest of us stayed in the car. From there, we went to another co-defendant's friend's house, which ended up being right in the vicinity of the Burrito Express.
Jennifer's friends and later co-defendants, Kenneth Smith, Justin Hofteling, and David Collette, their sole connection to this situation was that they arrived at their friend's house near the Burrito Express in the aftermath of this robbery-turned-homicide that occurred around 7:20 p.m. the same evening.
Two masked men came into the Burrito Express. No one was in there except the owner, Raul Brezeno, and his employee, Eduardo Pardo, and they were in the back. And the first masked man had a .22 caliber gun, and they were attempting to rob the Burrito Express. Mr. Brezeno took the butcher knife and started chasing them with Mr. Pardo following right behind him. They chased them out. Now, this is March in northern Illinois. There's ice. It's cold. And one of the perpetrators slips on the ice and falls. And so Mr. Pardo grabs him, takes off his mask so he gets a good look at him, and starts dragging him back to the restaurant. Mr. Brezeno, the owner, has yelled at a passing car to call the police, and the perpetrator starts yelling to his friend because he's now been caught. The friend turns around and removes his mask and starts shooting. He's trying to get him to let his friend go. And Mr. Brezeno and Pardo are dragging him back to the Burrito Express. At one point, Mr. Brezeno gets hit. And so Mr. Pardo drops the perpetrator and runs in and calls the police. By the time he comes back out, the two men are gone, and Mr. Brezeno is on the ground and has been shot. He died a little bit later. Within 10 minutes of everything starting, the police were there, and Mr. Pardo spent a couple of hours that night with law enforcement, and they got composite sketches of each of the suspects that night.
Pardo also said that the assailant he'd caught was wearing a green leather jacket, and police began to canvass the area looking for suspects. Meanwhile, Jennifer and her friends were just up the hill from the Burrito Express.
Throughout the evening, we were watching out the back window of that house. We saw detectives putting, you know, the yellow markers on the ground for the different things that they were finding. I ended up not driving home that night because I was scared. I called my mother and told her, you know, something was going on in this area. I'm going to go ahead and stay here for the night. It was the four of us. The mother came home from work. She worked at a gas station nearby the house. There was a couple younger kids there, you know, and we were just in the house actually watching the news of the scene of the crime and what was going on. Of course, you're interested and it's, you know, happening right behind you. And then we all eventually went to sleep. While we were sleeping, McHenry police were doing canvassing of the neighborhood. And when they had came to the house, they asked for the people's IDs who were in the house. I was sleeping. And they were given my ID out of my purse.
As she said, they canvassed the neighborhood and had all the different identification. And so Jennifer, I think, was questioned a couple of different times and obviously told them they knew nothing about this. And what we've learned later is they seemed to zero in on her friend, her co-defendant, Ken Smith.
And why?
I've heard that they thought he may have gotten away with something else, another crime. He hadn't really been in trouble before. And so I think it just seemed like all of a sudden they thought, he's right here behind the Burrito Express, must have done this.
It was later discovered that Mr. Pardo had viewed a photo array that contained photos of Jennifer's co-defendants, but did not identify them. It's believed that he was deported, and Jennifer and her friends remained the focus of the investigation. The police theory was that Jennifer, and perhaps David Collette, drove Ken Smith and Justin Hofteling to the Burrito Express before the crime and may or may not have known what the assailants had planned. And they brought Jennifer in on May 11th, 2001 to take a polygraph.
I went in willingly. It was two McHenry County detectives, a Round Lake Beach police officer who was actually a friend of the family.
And of your family?
Yes. And was accompanying me in the situation, assuring my mother, they just want to talk to her. You know, you don't need a lawyer. Don't worry.
Her mother specifically asked if she needed to get her a lawyer.
Yes.
You're told that if you have nothing to hide, why would you need a lawyer? And that is so incorrect. Make sure that you have representation as you're trying to be helpful to the police.
But there was another factor at play here.
I was diagnosed with bipolar and manic depression. So I was on medication. Before I went into the lie detector test, I was given a dose of one of my medications, which was Klonopin. So Klonopin is a sleep aid.
After that, she had the lie detector test. There were only four questions asked. After that, they come out and say a couple answers were highly suspicious. And so then they start trying to, what really happened? What really happened? They didn't believe her. They didn't believe her.
By 2001, polygraphs were no longer admissible in court. And when law enforcement tells a subject that they failed or their answers were suspicious, this serves to arm interrogators with a pseudoscientific reason why their subject's denials just cannot be believed.
We get back to McHenry County Police Department. They take me into almost like a boardroom with long tables, a big screen TV. They pop in a VHS, and it was footage of the smoke shop, which was called Cloud Nine. And the footage did show one of my co-defendants in there shopping around, which did happen that night. We did go to the smoke shop. So they asked me to identify who was on the tape. I did so.
It was David Collette on video at 7:38 p.m. Importantly, they were all still together. Jennifer's ordeal continued.
Another detective comes in that I hadn't met that day yet. So it becomes three detectives and myself in the room.
Multiple male law enforcement officers, no parent, no attorney, nothing.
And he basically just started saying, this is what we want you to say. Tell us what we want to hear and you can go home. We know you didn't have anything to do with it. Just give us this name and all of this can be done and over with. And as I keep saying, we didn't commit this crime. I don't know, you know, what you want me to say. I don't know what you're talking about. Like, this isn't right, you know. Sorry.
At any time, you know, an attorney could have said, this is not going to go on anymore. She kept asking to go home and thought she was going to go home. And they kept saying, oh, we will take you home, you know, and so it gets longer and longer. Again, social science study shows people's defenses start to break down after about an hour and a half.
Wow.
This went on for over 14 hours as they kept drilling, starting and stopping recording. Just tell us what we want to hear and you can go home. I just remember being in a daze from the medication, not understanding what's going on, and just wanting it to be over with.
Oftentimes people, they'll say anything just to get out of the situation, thinking, well, we'll get out of the situation, and then they'll find out the evidence and it'll show that I didn't do it. You know, they'll go get the actual perpetrators.
Right.
So eventually, one of them sat with like a yellow legal pad and he would write down descriptions of things that happened in the crime. Even drew a picture of like the gun that was used and kind of like a description of it. And he said, if there's anything that you mess up on, you can glance over here at this legal tablet. And every time I didn't get something right, he would shut off the camera and the recording and just start screaming. And then I just couldn't take it anymore. And I told them what they wanted to hear just so we could be over with. I just wanted to go home.
You're listening to Wrongful Conviction. You can listen to this and all the Lava for Good podcasts 1 week early and ad-free by subscribing to Lava for Good Plus on Apple Podcasts.
Last season, millions tuned into the Betrayal podcast to hear a shocking story of deception. I'm Andrea Gunning, and now we're sharing an all-new story of betrayal. Stacy thought she had the perfect husband. Doctor, father, family man. It was the perfect cover for Justin Rutherford to hide behind.
They led me into the house, and I mean, it was like a movie.
He was sitting at our kitchen table. The cops were guarding him.
Stacy learned how far her husband would go to save himself.
I slept with a loaded gun next to my bed.
He did not just say, I wish he was dead. He actually gave details and explained different scenarios on how to kill him.
He, to me, is scarier than Jeffrey Dahmer.
Listen to Betrayal on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Maya Shunker, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything. A moment that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these very moments.
The last couple of years has been the hardest season of our marriage for sure. I'm surprised our marriage survived it. I think we both are. I think we both were barely holding on. Nothing compares to how hard this is.
Their stories are full of candor, awe, and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change.
True behavior change is really identity change. Every action you take is a vote for the type of person you wish to become.
Listen to A Slight Change of Plans on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
When the Taliban banned music in Afghanistan, millions were plunged into silence. Radios were smashed, cassettes burned. You could be beaten or jailed or killed for breaking the rules. And yet, Afghans did it anyway. This is the story of how a group of people brought music back to Afghanistan by creating their own version of American Idol. The danger they endured.
They said my head should be cut off.
The joy they brought to the nation.
You're free completely. No one is there to destroy you.
I'm John Legend. Listen to Afghan Star on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
In a videotape statement that ended around 10:10 p.m., Jennifer said that she saw police activity in the area, then lent her car to her three friends. Then they returned and admitted to the shooting, but why would there be police activity before the alleged assailants even left to commit the crime? That makes absolutely no sense.
There are two different videotape interrogations. In the first one, she starts breaking down and giving them information, but again, highly unreliable. They take a break, and while they said they did not give her medication until after the second interrogation, the video stops recording, but on the audio, you hear a man say, "Do you want coffee with your medication?" And then the false confession from that first videotape wasn't really accurate, so then they do another videotape, and they get the confession that ends up being used at her trial, which is more accurate, but again, none of the withheld facts from the crime. Did she know? Did her co-defendants know? Had no idea.
Often police will withhold information from the public in order to better assess the credibility of witnesses. In this case, there were two details. One, that Mr. Briceño had a head injury that was consistent with being pistol whipped. And two, that Mr. Briceño had yelled to a passing car to call 911. Jennifer mentioned neither. Instead, she placed herself in the car, alleging that all three of her co-defendants had participated and that only one wore a mask, directly contradicting the known facts of the crime.
I remember falling asleep in the corner of the interrogation room. I remember a blanket being thrown on me. The next morning, I woke up in a holding cell. I woke up to a detective throwing a bag of McDonald's breakfast at me and saying, "You need to get up. We're charging you with first-degree murder."
Wow.
They shackled me, put me in a squad car, and took me to McHenry County Jail.
The following day, they arrested 15-year-old Justin Hofteling, who informed the police that he was on hallucinogenic drugs, but they interrogated him anyway. What the fuck?
Sorry.
He maintained his innocence, but changed his story when he was told a lie, that all three of his friends, not just Jennifer, had made incriminating statements, and that if he did too, he could make a deal. He said that Jennifer drove him and Smith to the Burrito Express, and they committed the robbery homicide.
Her co-defendant, who was 15, gave a very unreliable confession, didn't have any of the facts correct when they gave him choices of the gun. He chose an automatic, not a 22.
How could he know? He didn't know.
Yeah. He was under the influence of drugs, too, during his false confession.
Justin Hofteling was facing potentially 67 years in prison, and so he accepted a 20-year sentence. David Collette accepted 5 years to testify that Jennifer drove all three of them to the Burrito Express, where he split from Ken and Justin and did not participate. But before anyone appeared in court, the mother of an alternate suspect came forward and pointed the finger at her own daughter.
What was never disclosed to Jennifer's trial counsel was there was an alternate suspect group that had repeatedly confessed to family and friends of committing this crime. In November of 2001, the mom called in to the police and she says, "My daughter told me you have the wrong people," that her daughter was driving in the car and saw her friends run into the Burrito Express and then saw them run out. And the owner yelled at her to call the police.
Wow.
She also said that her daughter saw the person that was doing the shooting come back and hit Mr. Briceño in the head with the butt of the gun to knock him over, to let go of his friend. That's two pieces of information about the crime that they withheld from the public to corroborate confessions.
The daughter's name is Suzanne DeChico, and her friends' names are Russell Levand and Adam Highland.
The alternate suspect group was at her mom and stepdad's home, which was also close to the Burrito Express. And because it was a bloody struggle, the alternate suspect got cut up on his shins from the ice, but also his hand got a cut from the knife. And they end up burning their clothes because there's so much blood. And 8 weeks to 10 weeks later, they took her car over the border in Wisconsin and torched the car because they couldn't get the blood out from the back seat of the car. Jennifer's car, in 2020 still, when we were going in for DNA testing, it was still impounded by the police. They had it in their custody. You know, 19 years later, they never found anything in the car.
Because it wasn't it.
Nothing was in there. Yeah. Right. So you have this mother calling in. She identifies the two friends of her daughter's and her daughter. Her daughter has confessed to other people.
And the police didn't just ignore this tip.
When this mother called in, she also said, they stole my husband's gun. And they tested that gun and found that the bullet that was taken from Mr. Brezeno's body matched 5 of the 6 grooves, but they couldn't say it definitively matched. But it had a crack in the handle, which her daughter talked about him hitting Mr. Brezeno in the forehead with the butt of the gun to get him to let go of his friend.
When it comes to ballistics testing, guns can only be definitively ruled out, not matched, to the exclusion of all of the guns on the planet. But with the cracked handle and matching mother-daughter confessions, it appears that this crime basically solved itself. Even still, police and prosecutors hid this information from the defense and put Justin Hofteling and David Collette on the stand at Jennifer's trial in March 2002. But theirs and Jennifer's stories were inconsistent with each other, as well as inconsistent with reality, which naturally raised doubts.
So it was last day of the trial. The jury was arguing. They couldn't come to a decision. The judge I had, Judge Arnold, stated to the jury that they had to hurry up and come up with a decision. And the jury was brought in and I was found guilty.
You see on the sentencing document stating that she did not participate in the planning or carrying out of this, that she wasn't a threat to society, that she'd never been in trouble with the law. But because she drove them, he sentenced her harshly to 27 years in prison.
And the crazy irony is that the people that she drove also had nothing to do with it.
Yes, exactly. Although, of course, law enforcement said her friends committed this crime.
Even if that were true, that would mean that if you at home, I'm speaking to everybody who's listening, or me or you, or just sitting in our car, and a couple of friends come up and go, hey, can I get a ride down the block and you give them a ride, yep, not knowing that they may have done yep anything, yep, you can now be convicted, a sentence to 27 years in prison.
27 years straight through. No good days, no credit for school, no contracts for good time, straight through.
I hope that's making everybody else as angry as it makes me, because it's absurd. It's actually absurd. But the other thing about this that I got to go back to is the fact that they had to have known, because of this conscientious mom, there should be so much credibility in that phone
yes
call.
Yes.
And she had the accurate information.
Yes.
But Jennifer didn't.
Right.
And her co-defendant's confession was wrong in different ways.
Exactly.
So the jury comes back and finds you guilty.
Yes. As he read the verdict, I remember watching the judge like everything was in slow motion. And I turned around and looked at my mom, and I just saw her face drop in disbelief. And then they took me away.
Last season, millions tuned into the Betrayal podcast to hear a shocking story of deception. I'm Andrea Gunning, and now we're sharing an all-new story of betrayal. Stacy thought she had the perfect husband. Doctor, father, family man. It was the perfect cover for Justin Rutherford to hide behind.
They led me into the house, and I mean, it was like a movie.
He was sitting at our kitchen table. The cops were guarding him.
Stacy learned how far her husband would go to save himself.
I slept with a loaded gun next to my bed.
He did not just say, I wish he was dead. He actually gave details and explained different scenarios on how to kill him.
He, to me, is scarier than Jeffrey Dahmer.
Listen to Betrayal on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, I'm Dr. Maya Shunker, and I'm a scientist who studies human behavior. Many of us have experienced a moment in our lives that changes everything. A moment that instantly divides our life into a before and an after. On my podcast, A Slight Change of Plans, I talk to people about navigating these very moments.
The last couple of years has been the hardest season of our marriage for sure. I'm surprised our marriage survived it. I think we both are. I think we both were barely holding on. Mm. Nothing compares to how hard this is.
Their stories are full of candor, awe, and hard-won wisdom. And you'll hear from scientists who teach us how we can be more resilient in the face of change.
True behavior change is really identity change. Every action you take is a vote for the type of person you wish to become.
Listen to A Slight Change of Plans on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you love Selena?
Like, really love?
Whether you saw her live, saw the movie as a kid, or saw her looks all over TikTok, there's no shortage of reasons to stan the Queen of Tejano.
And stan we do over three whole episodes of our podcast, Becoming an Icon.
We're reminiscing as lifelong Selena fans, sharing hot takes and telling her story. Listen to Becoming an Icon on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search Becoming an Icon.
Being in prison and being innocent of the crime that you're convicted of. One time I told somebody I've never felt so alone around so many people. When you go through something like this, it's like you go through stages. Like, okay, I know I'm wrongfully convicted, but at 19, they're sending me to an adult max women's facility. I have to prepare myself for this. You finally get there and you're like, okay, I'm here. I don't know what's going on. I know that I'm innocent. Now I have to take this next step, this next stage. And the stages you went through before that, you never heal from any of it. Because you're just facing the next one, trying to get through every day, trying to get, you know, and it's all on you to figure out what you're going to do every day to help yourself get through it. Schooling, programs, different things that you can do to stay sane.
While Jennifer was braving prison, the evidence about the alternate suspects was coming out during Ken Smith's first trial, and her appellate counsel used that evidence, albeit unsuccessfully.
So Jennifer had been represented up to a point, and then her case was basically dormant. But all along, her co-defendant, Ken Smith, who they allege was the actual shooter, was tried by McHenry County three different times. As we go in and litigate cases, defense attorneys and prosecutors are making motions to bring stuff in, keep stuff out. His convictions kept getting overturned by the appellate court immediately because evidence kept being left out.
Importantly, the ballistics testing for Suzanne DiCicco's stepfather's .22 caliber rifle came to light, as well as even more confessions from Suzanne DiCicco.
She was in trouble often with the law. They knew her. They were talking to her about something else, and she told two different police officers about this, and they didn't take her seriously. They said she was bragging and trying to get street cred.
And it appears that Justin Hofteling also had a guilty conscience.
Yes. He wrote Jennifer 4 months later apologizing for lying. He wouldn't testify against her co-defendant, Ken Smith, in his first trial. That trial got overturned. They go to retry him again. In the second trial, he gets on the stand and gives his false confession. On cross-examination, he admits that he just lied, that Ken didn't do this, they didn't do this, but he had to stick with his false confession or they were going to revoke his plea deal. They then prosecute him for perjury, and he gets 5.5 more years.
The judge also blocked any evidence implicating the alternate suspects, even though Adam Hyland had allegedly confessed to his roommate and two others.
And the roommate said, you need to talk to an attorney, and took him to see a defense attorney. And he told the defense attorney, with his roommate sitting there, me and my friend did this. We were trying to rob the Burrito Express. And the defense attorney told him to be quiet. Don't say anything. They already have other people for this crime.
How do we know all that?
Well, in her co-defendant's third trial, the roommate got on the stand and under oath testified to that.
However, at Smith's third trial in 2012, once again, a mound of evidence corroborating the alternate suspects was not admitted. But even with that, it's still surprising that the jury once again convicted and sent Ken away for 67 years. When law enforcement, just too kind to say they botch it, when they really cover it up for the actual perpetrators. That means our tax dollars are paying these people to work in service of the actual people who committed these crimes.
Yes. Well, and we know in this case that these alternate suspects have gone on to commit multiple crimes. McHenry has prosecuted them over and over. And in something out of a movie that you couldn't script, when we went in to argue the DNA motion, the alternate suspect, who we're pretty certain was the shooter, was being arraigned on drug-induced homicide charges. Wow. Same day, in the same court. And
but that homicide happened after the...
Oh, this was 2020 when we're in there. But they've prosecuted him over and over for multiple crimes. He's been in and out of prison, as has the other alternate suspect.
Right. Had they done even a fraction of their jobs, these other people who were harmed or killed by these two guys would have never met those fates.
Right.
And the Brezeno family, the Pardo family, is deprived of justice as well.
Unfortunately, they do not know all of the new evidence that we have. And so they only know what they're told. And the state's attorney and the prosecutors are certain that they still got the right people, despite our co-defendant's exoneration. And so, you know, they think that we're trying to just pin it on someone else. I mean, you know, they, which is too bad. You know, the DNA testing that we did in 2021 of the crime scene evidence, the knife, the clothing. Of course, we all know Jennifer's going to be excluded, but all three co-defendants all excluded. And, you know, there was that close tussle and they're dragging him, the knife. But there's one unknown male DNA that is in there that has not been compared to the alternate suspect standards. They won't.
And we see that time and again.
Yeah.
So then how did you end up connecting with the Illinois Innocence Project?
I found a paralegal out of Lincoln, Illinois, by the name of Fonda Robbins. So I contacted her. I sent her paperwork, copies of everything I had, which I had done multiple times, you know, to different pro bono lawyers, different states. I went through years and years of doing that. And finally, Fonda Robbins contacted me, and I got blessed with the contact information to Mr. John Hanlon.
He was our executive director. He's still working with us on cases, but he retired from the executive director role.
Some months had went by, and all of a sudden I got a call to go up to the visiting room, which was a surprise to me. My visits with family were always planned because they live so far away. So I get up there, go through the whole strip search situation, get in there, and this man comes around the corner and he says, "Jennifer, my name is John Hanlon and I work with the Illinois Innocence Project." We then went into a private room. And as I turned the corner, I want to say there was about six or seven people there, including students, supporters, and other attorneys there just to listen and to help, finally.
John started on her case and I joined the project about a year and a half later, and he brought me on to Jennifer's case and turned it over to me. So I started in 2019 on her case.
I mean, you got busy.
We did. And, you know, interestingly, we filed that DNA motion and actually were in court same day with the alternate suspect, argued it right the day before the courts shut down with COVID to get evidence shipped out for DNA testing. So we get the DNA results April 2021, and that's the point where the state comes and offers Jennifer a plea deal.
What did that look like?
We expected that she would be exonerated, that they would say, "Look, we got it wrong. She needs to be released." And they said, "No, we got it right with Ken." Three juries convicted him. It didn't matter that they kept not hearing all the evidence. And so they said, "But she's already spent way too long in prison, even if she's guilty for what, you know, she was convicted of. It's been way too long." It was a harsh sentence. So if she will plead guilty to armed violence, which again, she never participated in the crime, we'll let her out for time served. But if she resumes her post-conviction litigation to prove her innocence, we will revoke her plea deal and she will be returned to prison, even though they've said she's already spent way too long in prison. And so she had this hard decision. So we told her, you can either take this deal and get out immediately, but you're going to have this Class X felony of armed violence on your record, or we're going to keep representing you and we'll file your successive post-conviction petition and litigate your innocence, but you're going to be sitting in prison for at least another few years.
It's like a Sophie's choice.
Yeah.
Right?
So I lost my mom 8 years into my incarceration. I was actually released on her birthday. A big part of me taking the plea was being home to help my family. I had already saw my mother in a casket, shackled from head to toe. About 6 years ago, my father was diagnosed with Alzheimer's dementia. And I wanted to make it home and for him to see me home before he didn't know who I was. So I was so thankful for that. Going to court that day was a hard decision. You know, at first, when I gave my false confession, people would say, well, why would you do that if you really didn't commit this crime? You don't know what it feels like until you're going through it. And even now, they said, well, why would you plead guilty to that charge if you're innocent, if you didn't commit this crime? Again, you don't know what it feels like. But going to court that day was hard having to plead guilty to something I didn't do.
Yeah.
You know, as they're reading, you know, the description of the crime and what went on and my so-called role, I just stood there and cried, you know, standing next to my lawyers.
You accept this plea. It's a bittersweet, obviously, but you're calling home.
When I left from McHenry County, I was 19 years old going to prison. Coming back to McHenry to get released, I was almost 40. And as I walked into the bullpens and entering, you know, the county jail, I had officers who became sergeants and lieutenants throughout the years that I was, you know, incarcerated. And they said, finally, the truth is coming out and you guys are going home. Everybody all these years has known the truth and, you know, has known that you didn't commit this crime.
I mean, we obviously want to see the day when the full exoneration comes to pass.
Our only option now is clemency, which we filed and presented a clemency petition to the Prisoner Review Board in January on her behalf, because that's not a legal proceeding. That is Jennifer's only way to be exonerated.
A pardon. Yes. And you richly deserve one. So can people write somewhere?
Write to Governor Pritzker, because we have, as I said, presented her clemency petition to the Prisoner Review Board, and they will be making a recommendation, but he's the one who ultimately will make that decision.
Great. So we'll have like a sample letter in the episode description.
Okay. Yes.
And we'll make it easy for you. I know it sounds like, yes. What do I write? What do I write to? We're going to make it easy. Go to the episode description and we'll have everything you need to write a letter. And with that, now we turn to my favorite part of the show, which is called closing arguments. And it works like this. First of all, I thank you both once again. And I now have the privilege of just listening to anything else you want to say.
I want to thank you so much, Jason, for asking us here and highlighting Jennifer's story. You know, it's a privilege for us to get to share her story. You know, one thing I'd like to say is when these wrongful convictions happen, you know, as we take on these cases, we're very cognizant of the fact that you have someone who was a victim of a crime. Before we take on a case, we do so much investigation and testing to make sure, because what happens when someone's wrongfully convicted, you now have another victim of a crime. And the original victim never got true justice because the real perpetrators are still out there and often committing other crimes. And so it's really important that we represent these people that are wrongfully convicted. And I want victims of crimes to understand that's what we're doing. We are not trying to get perpetrators out of jail. She was a victim herself. And we want justice. And real justice is getting the true perpetrators in crime and getting innocent people out of prison. Jennifer.
It's an honor to be here. I want to thank everybody tremendously for the work that you do. All the innocence projects around the world. Because if it wasn't for you guys, we wouldn't be here. And all the hard work that you do. It's been a long journey, good days, bad days, but I'm here taking it one day at a time. And I just appreciate life so much more. And if there was one thing that I could tell everybody, it can happen to anybody. And it happens more than people know. I met people every day, you know, where different things went on in their case and they just didn't have the strength to fight, you know, but I knew that I had to keep on fighting. Another big thing is know your rights. When it comes to interrogations, lawyers, Miranda rights, you know, get the knowledge behind it. I know that if I knew and I understood at a young age, I don't think that it would have went that far.
Thank you for listening to Wrongful Conviction. You can listen to this and all the Lava for Good podcasts 1 week early by subscribing to Lava for Good Plus on Apple Podcasts. I want to thank our production team, Connor Hall and Kathleen Fink, as well as my fellow executive producers, Jeff Kempler, Kevin Wardis, and Jeff Clyburn. The music in this production was supplied by 3-time Oscar-nominated composer, Jay Ralph. Be sure to follow us across all social media platforms at Lava for Good and at Wrongful Conviction. You can also follow me on Instagram at It's Jason Flom. Wrongful Conviction is a production of Lava for Good Podcasts in association with Signal Company No. 1.
Last season, millions tuned into the Betrayal podcast to hear a shocking story of deception. I'm Andrea Gunning, and now we're sharing an all-new story of betrayal. Justin Rutherford. Doctor, father, family man. It was the perfect cover to hide behind.
Detective Weaver said, "I'm sure you know why we're here." I was like, "What in the world is going on?"
Listen to Betrayal on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, listener. I'm Carol Fisher, the host of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister. I'm so excited for you to hear the brand new season where we're uncovering a 35-year-old mystery. But for those of you who didn't hear season one or just want to listen to it again, you can now get access to all episodes of that first season of The Girlfriends 100% ad-free through the iHeart True Crime Plus subscription, which is available exclusively on Apple Podcasts. You'll also get access to every single episode of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, ad-free and 1 week early, only available to iHeart True Crime Plus subscribers. So what are you waiting for? Head to Apple Podcasts, search for iHeart True Crime Plus, and subscribe today.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabby Collins. And this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.